And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today's Thursday, March 28th. Happy Easter, by the way. And we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with only Darren tonight as Kevin is searching for secrets to the universe. Please listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a share. If you want to talk to us, send us a question. A lot of tournament stuff going on. We'll be happy to respond back to you. Today, we're at the Sweet 16. We started at 68 last week. We're down to 16 before today started. We're going to talk about it all. And we're going to talk about what else is going on around the world of sports right now. Give us a listen as we go through it. We're going to start it off with the tournament. Darren, why don't you give us a start here?
Well, here's the thing. You know, you and I had the pleasure of getting to spend the weekend together down in AC. So we got to watch the Wednesday night, Thursday, and Friday games together, which was awesome, as it always is every year. For those that don't know us well, Gino and I, along with Kevin somewhat, have been doing this since where we get together for the first round of the tournament for well over 20 years, probably closer to 30. And it's something that we've always enjoyed. We used to go to Vegas. Now it's Atlantic City. In between, when the kids were little and we couldn't do anything, we would just go to OTBs or different sports bars, whatever it is. But this is something that we this is our favorite little time of the year. To me, it starts the great sports season as we go from here to baseball kicking off opening day. And, you know, you get the Masters and you get the playoffs for hockey and the playoffs for it kind of starts off the next part of the year after football is kind of done. So we kind of always look forward to March. Just to go through it real quick here, first four is the first four. You don't normally talk about it, but Virginia flat out embarrassed themselves, showed the committee why they didn't deserve a spot. Still can't believe they got in. I know it's beyond, but Virginia couldn't score 14 points in the first half. That was just as bad as it gets. Normally you wouldn't talk first four, but Virginia deserved to be mentioned. No, I'm not Stephen A. Smith, where Tony Bennett should be fired. I did win a title there. But at the same point in time, that team didn't have the numbers. They didn't have any reason to be in. How the committee chose them is beyond. At the same point in time, the other ACC teams haven't lost yet. So this is the only one that went down. So that's the way it goes. And first round games, I'm just going to go by day because we Thursday and Friday, we were down there. Duquesne holding off BYU is probably one of the bigger upsets, an 11 over a 6. BYU never really seemed like they had a grasp, but never really in that game. It was one of those things where Duquesne just came out strong and they held it. It was pretty impressive, G. Dayton stormed back on Nevada. Gino had to hear me rant about this for 2 days because that cost me a boatload of money. But they came back from down 17, a little over 6 to play. And they wanted a regulation, just to put it in perspective. We were out to dinner, actually, during part of that game. We got back. I couldn't believe that I lost that game. But Nevada showing what the Mountain West does here in this tournament. Oregon handled South Carolina pretty convincingly. South Carolina tried to make little runs here and there, but could never really do anything. Same thing with NC State. They controlled Texas Tech. Game was close at the half. They just really kind of – they were the better team. Then you get a couple of interesting ones. Oakland stunned Kentucky. And to the chagrin of many Kentucky fans, Calipari's already been announced that he'll be back. But at the same time, Oakland, Golkey hit what, 10 threes? I think it was 6 in the first half, G?
Unbelievable. He was an unstoppable force that day.
And you know what? Kentucky just Reed Sheppard couldn't hit a shot. When you put it all together, Kentucky's been upset in the first round 2 of the last 3 years. And, listen, there's a lot of great players that are on the Kentucky team, but the young players don't seem to be able to rise to the occasion in this tournament sometimes. Kansas avoided the Samford upset with the late mysterious call, G. They called a foul on a clean block. I mean, it was unreal. Just unreal that's the way it happened. I thought that Samford gave Kansas everything that they could, and yet the refs kind of hosed them on it. A couple other games, Washington State pulled away a little late from Drake. That was close most of the way. Drake actually led 2 years in a row. Inside 5 minutes, Drake leads, and they blow it. Last year to Miami, who made it to the Final Four. This year to Washington State, who made it to the second round, so they didn't go very far. Texas also put a little hurt, did to Colorado State what Colorado State did to Virginia. They wouldn't let them score. Also on Thursday, Michigan State pulled away from Mississippi State. Game was close for a little while, but Michigan State was the better team throughout. Illinois struggled early, Moorhead. Then they pulled away convincingly. That offense is just something to admire, the way that they put the ball in the hole. And Creighton did the same thing with Akron. Down early, struggled, but battled back. And then, you know, also on Thursday, Arizona, North Carolina, Iowa State, Gonzaga, Tennessee, they all rolled. They were never threatened. Then we get to Friday, where Gino had good betting days both days. I was good on Friday, the way it worked. Northwestern outlasted Florida Atlantic in overtime. This was an excellent game and an excellent way to kick off the Friday slate. Northwestern just outscored them with 17 points in the overtime. Both teams struggled to score early on in that game, and then the scoring kind of picked up pretty quickly in that one. San Diego State also escaped against UAB. That was a battle. UAB gave them all that they wanted, right? And San Diego State found a way to get through. Yale stunned Auburn. Auburn led late, but we had the ejection early on with the cheap shot elbow, and Auburn just could not cover Yale's 3-point shooting. Yale was just a tougher squad in that game. Colorado outlasted Florida in one of two games where the total score was over 200 points, 102 to 100. Florida obviously missing the big man definitely hurt them, but at the same time, you know, just a good game by Colorado, who made it to the first four and then bounced right back with just a great performance to get to the round of 32. Alabama outscored Charleston. We were both into this. We both had the over. And we were loving every second of it, G. For a few seconds, it was like, what's going on? And I was like, don't worry, pal. Watch this. And they just went off. They must have scored like 20 points in like a two-minute stretch. 3-3, 2-3, 3-3. Two great offensive teams. Not a lot of defense played in this one. But, Alabama, the much better team. Grand Canyon at night, outlasting St. Mary's. And what was a good game? I mean, you know, Grand Canyon just plays a very interesting style, G.
And that was the last game of the night.
Absolutely.
Friday. That game didn't end until 1:40 Eastern time. It was a long game. The last 6 minutes felt like it lasted about 29. But it was a good game. Grand Canyon outlasted St. Mary's.
We were watching in a conference room, and the security was just waiting for us to leave. It was hysterical because we stayed until the end on that one. But Grand Canyon gets to the line more than anybody, and they did that night as well. James Madison pretty much controlled Wisconsin. Wisconsin made that run, and then James Madison put it into another gear, pulled away, held them off late. Utah State was just far better than TCU. It wasn't much of a game.
Yeah.
And Duke kind of pulled away from Vermont late. Houston, Purdue, A&M, Clemson, UConn, Baylor, they weren't threatened. And Marquette probably had the best comeback of the day. They were down huge in that game, put up a 51-point second half. You see the difference that Kolak makes on this team.
Yeah.
Stormed back and not only won the game, but covered the 14. It was very impressive for all of us that had bet Marquette. So that was the way the first round kind of went. Second round, see, the way this tournament went is actually almost perfect, in my opinion. Not quite, but almost. You have the first round upsets, and then the second round, the forms kind of hold a little bit, where you get the great matchups here in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. I don't know if you agree or disagree on that one, G.
So as far as upsets go, in the Midwest bracket, you really only had one upset, 11 beating the 6. In the East, you had 2. In the West, you had 2. The South is a completely different story. There were 5 upsets. So in that first round, the 3, 5, 6, 7, and 8 all went down, right? So you wound up with a 9, 10, 11, 12, a 14 all making it through to the second round. The problem is, and you'll get into this, the second round was almost chalk. So although we had all of those seeds make it in the South, one round, after the second round is over, you're down to 1, 2, 4, 11. So it basically, everything else basically held true. And the 3 seed was one of the biggest upsets of the day, which was Kentucky losing to Oakland. So when you really look at it, the upsets happened, 5 of them in one bracket. And then after we get through Saturday, Sunday, there's only one of those left. So
Well, here's the funny part about it. But this is what you want. You want Sweet 16 matchups like we have. So you don't want a team that doesn't belong that just happened to sneak through. The only double-digit seed that made it through is NC State. And why? Because in overtime, they beat the other double-digit seed, 14. Yep. So they were the favorite. They were the higher seed in that particular matchup. Yeah. But now you get great matchups. Like we're watching right now, Clemson and Arizona, three-point game, 2.5 to go. San Diego State, UConn's are not a close game right now, but rematch of the championship game last year. Game I was talking about when we did our show, Iowa State, Illinois, which I was hoping to see. Great offense versus great defense. You get that matchup.
Coming up later.
You know, you get Alabama and North Carolina, two teams that both like to run and gun. NC State and Marquette, you got the hottest team in the country going up against a team that is now whole again with a great point guard in Kolak. Gonzaga and Purdue, two teams that are rolling right now. You know, so you get to see all these fun matchups. Duke versus Houston. Duke played their best game of the season. The other night. And then and Creighton and Tennessee, another offense-defense matchup. So it should be cool. We're going to just touch real quick on the second rounds here on Saturday and Sunday.
I want to add one thing with the seed. So Sweet 16, right? Mm-hmm. 4 1s and 4 2s. So half of the 16 are basically chalk right off the bat. All the ones, all the twos won. They're in the Sweet 16. And then you got 2 3s, 2 4s, 2 5s. And then the two outliers are the 6, which is Clemson playing right now against Arizona, and the 11, which is North Carolina State. So as far as seeding wise, very, very chalky.
Both ACC teams, by the way, are the outliers as you're looking at them. Yep. So, I mean, you get into the weekend, you know, Arizona and Gonzaga really controlled their games. Huge second half by Gonzaga to pull away from Kansas. Kansas was embarrassed. Self, after the game, says, oh, a lot of times I was thinking about next season. Not during the games. I'm like, what the hell? Do you have to have a perfect team or you don't want to coach? I just thought that was the dumbest statement I'd heard all weekend. North Carolina and Iowa State also had a big second halves to get by Michigan State and Wazoo, respectively. NC State had to survive against Oakland. Creighton used overtime to escape to Oregon, who should have won the game. I thought Altman made a huge mistake by not calling the timeout to make sure he got the ball in the hands of the right shooter. Instead, he got it to Dante, who missed the one-on-one, but he's a 61% foul shooter. I didn't understand what Altman was doing. You had the timeout sitting there. Call the timeout. Make sure you get the inbounds play right. He did not do that. Tennessee never really trailed against Texas, but Texas never went away. And that game ended up being really, really feisty. Tennessee holding on by 4. And Illinois flat out destroyed Duquesne. Yeah. Where Duquesne was never a factor. Marquette had to escape Colorado. That game was close. A blowout early. Colorado tied it up, and then they pushed away. But we had a couple blowouts the other day. We had Duke crushing Utah State. I mean, you know, not Duke. UConn's crushing Duke State. I'm sorry. Duke crushed James Madison. Purdue crushed Utah State. My mistake. But they crushed them respectively. Like, those games weren't even close. And the other point you want to make about the way they do the television on this stuff, stop with the single games. You want to have one highlighted game at 12? Fine. But you know what? There's no reason why we can't do a 12, then a couple staggered at 2:30, 2:45, a couple more staggered at 5:30, 6 o'clock, and a couple more staggered at 7:30, 8 o'clock. I don't need to be up till midnight or 1 o'clock on a Sunday night watching a great game, by the way, between Houston and Texas A&M. I don't need to watch that. I need them to make the tournament watchable for us. NCAA is getting a little greedy with the way they're scheduling these games, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
And then on Sunday, Marquette, is like we said, they escaped that early Colorado push. UConn beat up Northwestern. Northwestern fought back a little bit, but that was it. Clemson held off Baylor. Big lead. Baylor stormed back, and then Clemson just, much like tonight, where Arizona has stormed back on him, Clemson just never seems to relinquish the lead. They find a way to hang in there. Yeah, Grand Canyon probably played the dumbest last 5 minutes I've ever seen, Gino. They did everything. Horrible. They had the lead. They were just going one-on-one with stupid play after stupid play and said, hey, you know, why don't you guys win at Bama? Because we don't really want this game. They didn't do anything correct down the stretch. They relied on really poor, I don't know how to say it. They're just poor plan. I mean, Bryce Drew did nothing to help his team out that night. And then the game of the weekend, I thought it was Houston A&M, G. That game. Yeah. Everybody fouled out on Houston. A few people fouled out on A&M. You know, it went to overtime as Anderson Garcia, who usually has the range of a 5-footer, buries a 3 to send it to OT. Beautiful shot, you know. And then Houston found a way to hang on, which I know is they're your champion. You needed that to happen. But yeah, that was pretty much the way the weekend went. So we, like you said, it held order. The only high seeded team we had, were the 6 and the 11. The 6 Clemson was better than Baylor. The 11 beat a 14. The 11 beat a 14. So they were supposed to win. And that game went to overtime also. So now we have great matchups here in the Sweet 16. Lots of good things to look forward to. The conference that we picked on, the ACC, has the most teams remaining with 4. The two conferences that had 8 teams in only have 2 left. Big East has all 3 of their teams, saying, you know, perhaps maybe they could have gotten a 4th team in, as Seton Hall is running through the NIT right now, but who knows? Big Ten has their 2.
That was the call, Seton Hall over Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty easy. The Big Ten has the 2. The Mountain West has just San Diego State. The Pac-12 has just Arizona. West Coast Conference has just Gonzaga. So it's been a fun tournament so far. Haven't had the buzzer beaters we were looking for. Had a couple overtimes, but haven't had the guy hit that shot at the gun that we would like to see. Hopefully we get to see that a little bit this weekend, G, because that would make it a little bit more exciting. But yeah, we're down to 8 matchups. Which one are you looking most forward to, pal?
Actually, the one later on tonight, Illinois-Iowa State, to me is big time.
I think that is, I said it when we did our show, that's the one I hope to have happen, and it's happening.
Big Ten champ, Big 12 champ, this is big time.
I also think that Alabama-North Carolina could be a fun one. Creighton-Tennessee is a really good matchup, too, with an offense-defense. Duke-Houston, if Duke plays like they did the other day, that's going to be a great matchup. Clemson, Arizona right now, the game is great. It's a 2-point game with 50 seconds left. So anything can happen here.
Purdue Gonzaga tomorrow. If Gonzaga is going to play the way they've been playing, they're going to give Purdue all they can handle. So,
no, you're right. You're right. Any best bet of the weekend? Anyone that you feel like's a lock?
North Carolina tonight. Tomorrow, not sure.
Okay.
Maybe Houston. I like Houston over Duke, but I'm sure Duke's going to give them all they can handle. So,
I'm just saying. I also agree with you on Carolina, just because I don't like the way Alabama plays defense. Alabama played great against Charleston. They still go up 96 points. Charleston, I know, puts it up there and shoots a lot of threes, but very, very cool Sweet 16 and Final 8 we should have. Hoping, you know, looks like right now it's not over yet, but looks like Clemson might knock out a 2 here and a 6 might be going to the 8. Not over yet, but it's a 2 possession game with about 26 seconds left. A lot of excitement there. UConn seems to be pulling away from San Diego State. Listen, the one thing you can say about this UConn team is actually better than last year's UConn team, because Klingon is better than Sanogo. Hawkins is better than anybody that shoots for UConn, but they just have more shooters. They just have more guys that can shoot the ball. When you add Spencer and, you know, Newton becomes a little bit more of a factor and Castle comes in, they just have more guys this year. I mean, I don't know if Hawkins missed a shot last year, but Sanogo, who played great, was excellent, but he's not what Klingon is. And that's what the difference is, G.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's going to take something extraordinary for UConn to go down. I don't know if we're going to see it, but it's going to take something extraordinary for that to happen. So
we have Clemson up 5 with just under 10 seconds to go going to the line. You might be a little ahead of me on that, but looking like number 2, the mighty Zona, might go down in the Pac-12 in their last tournament, as the Pac-12 will have no more teams left after the Sweet 16.
I am ahead of you, so I will wait until you know the result.
Okay, but I have the game as a 5-point game, but I stream and Gino watches on cable, so we're a little bit different than that. Anyway, that's really where we are with college hoops. Once again, a couple more buzzer beaters would be good, but we have some great seeded matchups here for the Sweet 16 and Elite 8. Back to you, pal.
All right. We're going to head over to baseball. We're going to touch on some signings and things that happened. We'll get into rule changes and predictions next week, along with some over-under win totals. But in baseball, within the last week, week and a half, all those pitchers that we weren't sure where they were going all went, and none of them went to the Yankees or the Mets. Snell signed with the Giants. Montgomery yesterday actually signed with Arizona.
Yep.
Lorenzen signed with Texas. So all those pitchers wound up somewhere. The Mets last week signed J.D. Martinez. That happened late last week when we were in Atlantic City. And then yesterday, out of nowhere, because the Yankees had to put two third basemen on the DL, they made a trade, a three-way trade. They dealt Bent Rofeldt. They wound up getting John Birdie back in the trade. And Oswaldo Cabrera and John Birdie are basically going to be your third baseman until LeMayu and Pereira are back and ready to play.
And Cabrera had a good opening day today, by the way. He played well. Yeah, he did.
No, Cabrera played well.
I said Cabrera.
Oh, okay. I'm talking about the other shortstop. The shortstop that they want to play.
But the kid that actually played third base.
He
played well today.
He hit
the first Yankee, homer of the year.
Yep.
So there you go.
The other thing that is out there is the Ohtani betting scandal dealing with his interpreter and approximately $4.5 million that was moved from an Ohtani account to cover gambling debts. MLB is investigating. Do you have any thoughts or opinions on this, Darren? Do you think this is going to wind up in a suspension for Ohtani at some point?
I do. How do you not know about $4.5 million being sent around? How are you trying to pretend like you weren't really involved, and then you were just trying to help a friend out and you had nothing to do with it? It doesn't seem that way, especially with all the deferred money he took for his contract. There seems to be a lot of shady things with money that go on with Shohei here. Listen, I don't know all the details. We can't prove anything, but it doesn't look like it's above board at this point in time with what Shohei has put down as what he knows. He wouldn't take questions. He refused to do that. It just didn't seem like he was above board with his answers, in my opinion. And this is kind of like a lifelong friend type of thing. So listen, maybe he was just bailing a friend out. It just doesn't seem to add up right now, in my opinion. Gee, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think there'll be an investigation. We talked about this a while ago with baseball, and that there's going to be some of these investigations that are going to come out. MLB and the other sports are too involved right now with all of the betting sites, with all of the casinos, with all of the lines, and there is just way too much. And there's going to be more of these that are going to come up. I don't know if this is going to result in a suspension for Ohtani, but I do think there will be something that will come out about this. Whether or not MLB explains it is, I think, another story. Whether or not it comes out on what exactly happened, I don't know if that's going to come out. Because this at this moment does not appear to be Ohtani gambling, I don't know what that's going to entail. To me, it's different when the athlete is actually gambling.
Heard what Pete Rose said. He goes, if I had somebody like that, an interpreter, I'd be in the Hall of Fame, is what he said.
Yeah.
In
the NFL, we had the Calvin Ridley thing happen. So I don't know what's going to come out of this. I guess we'll see. You know, little by little, these things are going to be worked out with the different sports on what kind of punishments are dealt out for these gambling issues that happen, that pop up. So we'll see. This is going to be the first one like this in baseball. So we'll find out what exactly happens. Do you have anything else with that?
No, not really. I mean, listen. Because of the whole interpreter thing, because of the whole, the guy's not speaking for himself, because of all the other little factors that go along with it, it makes it really hard to understand that if there's any sincerity behind what Shohei's saying. There are things where we can't grasp it. I mean, listen, there are like body language experts that could come out here and tell us all that stuff. Me and you ain't it, kid. So we have to sit here and kind of rely on the investigations to see if they really want to find anything out. The other thing just to mention about baseball is it's opening day, basically, today. I know that we had an openers when we were in Atlantic City between the Padres and the Dodgers. What a stupidity type of thing to do to have baseball open in Korea or Japan or any of these other countries. Nobody wants to see it. Stop. Opening day means something. It always has. It always will. But the one thing I'll say about it, it's probably the most overrated fan day of the year in the fact that when you win, your fans act like you're going to go win 100 games and, oh, everything's good. And when you lose, the sky is falling and everything's going to go just wrong. Now, here's the thing. The Yankees won today 5-4, and they got bailed out because Soto threw out a runner at the plate, Dubon at the plate, because Clay Holmes is not a freaking closer. I don't know if anybody knows this. Clay Holmes belongs in the eighth inning. Clay Holmes will close well against Kansas City and Pittsburgh. He'll do fine against the A's. You put him up against a good team, and I have no faith. And I know it's only game one, but I've been saying this for 2 years on this podcast. I'm not going to stop now. Clay Holmes should not be the closer on this team. They had a chance to sign Hader. They had a chance to sign Montgomery. All these guys, I understand them. Signing Montgomery for $25 million really cost the Yankees $55 million because of the luxury tax. I get it. Same thing for the Mets. I get it. I understand. But at the same time, the closer would have been somewhat valuable, in my opinion, because you need if the offense was putting runners on base all day today and they hit the three double plays early to kind of take them out of it. They kept taking Framber off the hook. That's where we sit with baseball. Mets start tomorrow because they got rained out today. So let's see what happens with their little run. And we'll get much more into baseball with our preview, issue real soon here, so to speak. Preview edition, I should say. Back to you, Gene.
All right. Where would you like to go next, Darren? Tell me.
Well, let's just do the NBA real quick. Knicks are playing great up to the 3 seed. Boston's still going to rule the East, but the Knicks do have a shot of getting the 2 spot. It seems like the teams that were playing so well early are all struggling. Cleveland, Miami, Philly, Chicago were playing well before, are all kind of struggling. The Knicks now with 10 games to go, hold on to the lead in the East. Hold on to the 3. If you can get to the 2, even better. That's really the goal.
Yeah, they're 2 wins back. They're tied right now for the 3rd. Hopefully they can at least hang on to the 3.
Mitchell Robinson came back, which was really cool. Yeah. Anunoby should be coming back. The big question mark is Randall, who is not cleared for basketball activities yet. So that becomes a bit of an issue. They will not go anywhere if they don't have Randall back. Not that I think Randall's this guy in the fourth quarter. I think he shies away from big-time shots at the end. But at the same time, you need his presence on the floor. DiVincenzo had the 11-3 game to set the Knick record. Hart seems to get triple-doubles and gets rebounds that you don't expect him to do all over the place for loose balls. A lot of things to like about this particular Knick team. Let's see if they can keep it going. Nets, on the other hand, they're basically done. They just don't have they don't have the talent, but they don't have one go-to guy. They have a bunch of nice – just little exemplary extra players like side guys, 3, 4, and 5 scorers. Bridges is not a 1. He's not a go-to. And none of the guys, maybe Cam Thomas is the only one, but they don't seem to like to use him much. They need to get they need to get a good draft pick. They need to get someone that can come in there and be a star. And they need to find a free agent that doesn't have to play with his friends and is willing to come over and take the maximum money with the Nets to give them a legitimate shot. They will not make the playoffs. The West, just for a quick second, is
– Well, so for the East, we both think the Nets aren't going to make the playoffs, which means the 10 teams are basically set.
Yep.
Could be the orders could switch based on the last 10 games, but basically the teams themselves, the 10 teams are set. And when we get to the West, it's basically 11 teams fighting for 10 spots.
Yeah, Houston has won 10 in a row. That's the only reason why I mentioned in the West. Yep. Houston, who was left for dead, is now a game behind Golden State. You have the 3 teams up top, which are a half game apart with Denver, Minnesota, Oak City. The Clippers only have a game lead for the four spot against the Warriors. They're fighting for home field, home court, I should say. Dallas, Phoenix, Sac, and the Lakers are all within like five games of each other if you go from the four to the nine. And then that Golden State-Houston race at the end. So, listen, some teams have 10, some have 9, some have 11, whatever it may be. We'll see how this goes down. When the NBA gets really close to the end, we'll start breaking it all down for everybody. But, you know, little early to see how they're going to finish out. We have to see what the matchups are going to be, who's playing well down the stretch. That'll determine the NBA for us, Chief.
Okay. All right. We'll touch on the NHL a little bit.
Sure, let's do it.
So, right about the same thing as the NBA, approximately 9-10 games left for all these teams. Mm-hmm. Right now, the Rangers are number one in the East. They've clinched the playoff berth. Locally, New Jersey and the Islanders are both within about 6 points. They're trailing the last spot for the playoffs, battling to try to get that spot. We'll find out as we come down. Right now, Islanders are actually winning today. So we'll see. That would be a big help for them as they attempt to get to the 8th spot and actually get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, the East has kind of gotten interesting. The Devils are starting to play a little bit better. Washington has actually gotten themselves in there. They haven't been really in one of the playoff spots all season. They finally got themselves in there. And they have a legit shot with two games in hand of catching Philly and really getting maybe a 6th seed as opposed to an 8th seed. You know, again, the East is, you know, I wouldn't say it's determined. The Islanders and the Devils have to do something special down the stretch to kind of get in. The West, on the other hand, the top teams are within like 10 points of each other. If you go seven of the top eight teams, you got six of the top eight is you have two teams in the 80s. But, you know, right now Dallas is the leader, but they played an extra game over Vancouver, 1 point back, Colorado, 2 points back. So, listen, we're going to have a really close race for the President's Trophy. We're going to have a really close race for the top seeds in all these leagues because, again, even though the Rangers have 100 points, Boston's only you know, a couple points back. Same thing with Florida, you know, so yeah, and Carolina. So it could go any way. Rangers may not even win their division, so you never know how it goes. But, yeah, exciting stuff going on in hockey. Like we said, we'll get more into it as the playoffs get going and we'll really delve deep. Right now, we're just going to brush on it and say, let's see if the Islanders and the Devils can make a run, and let's hope the Rangers, who are playing really good, can keep it going.
All right. We'll move over to a couple of NFL points. Mm-hmm. They had some rule changes. Let's save that for a couple of minutes.
Don't even get me
since the last time we were on, a couple of things had happened. The Rams, Aaron Donald retired.
Yep.
Philadelphia traded for Pickett from the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams, Jimmy G signed with the Rams. The Giants signed left tackle Tyron Smith.
The Jets did, not the Giants.
The Jets, excuse me. Chicago traded Fields to Pittsburgh. Kansas City traded Snead to Tennessee. And the Rams signed Tre'Davious White. Those are the major factors. Darren, what about the Jets?
Well, they also signed Mike Williams. They also signed him. So they got that other receiver as well. And listen, you know, when you break it down, this is always a fun time of year for the NFL as you're trying to imagine what your team can look like. Fact of the matter is this team will go as far as the health goes on this team. You know what I mean? Mike Williams played just a couple games last year. Teron Smith has been injured a lot of his career, as has Williams. Aaron Rodgers is your 40-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles. You know, so this team still needs depth at offensive line. You know, the defense should be relatively solid. But, again, it depends on injuries and how it's going to go. Jay?
So the Jets, they bring in Mike Williams. They've signed a couple of linemen. Are you sold on the two 30-plus-year-old linemen that you brought in? Are you, at this point, do you want them to grab a lineman with their first pick? Or as a lot of these mock drafts that I see everybody releasing, they have them taking a tight end. What are your thoughts on this, Darren?
I need more O-line. I it's hard to rely on Smith that you know he's going to be able to last the season. I would rather – honestly, I think for the Jets, and I don't always feel this way in a draft, I want to trade down. I want to still get a solid lineman. but I want to trade back. I want to see if I can get back into the second round. Okay. I think that there are, I'm not saying there are a lot of holes on this team, but there are still holes on this team to fill. You know, we don't know. Listen, you signed the tackles and stuff, and AVT also off an injury last 2 years, has not played a full season. He's a guy you're relying on. You know, there's a lot of question marks on this team. And what we need to do is figure out how we can build the depth on the line of scrimmage. They were in the running for Clowney, who also signed over with Carolina, but I didn't think defensive line was a real need. I thought that the need for this team is still going to be the offensive line. The defensive line is pretty stacked. Listen, I think that the Jets, if Rodgers can sling the ball and stay healthy, the Jets will have an opportunity to win 10 or 11 games. If he goes down, Tyrod Taylor, who's also often injured, is a guy that can carry you through a couple, but you can't count on him to stay healthy. So this team still needs to try to protect those guys the best they can with the most offensive linemen. I think Conklin is – listen, we all love Brock Bowers. We've seen him play at Georgia for, it seems like 25 years. He's always open. He catches a lot of balls. If they ended up drafting him, nobody would be crying about it. But the fact of the matter is this team needs more O-line depth.
Okay.
Giants, on the other hand, G, I think they have to stay in that six. I wouldn't do a quarterback, though. I know that everybody's talking about them getting a quarterback. I don't think they – I think you still got to stick with the lines. I think they have to still promote their offensive line more. I think – listen, you could take a great wide receiver as well if you like there. But I think that the quarterback is – listen, Daniel Jones is under contract for one more year. What we learned this year is you can find a quarterback and pay for one if you really want one bad enough. And they could always go that way if they don't get Shedeur Sanders next year, just to cover the other local team, in my opinion, as well. I think both teams will be improved over last year. Let's see how improved they really are. Giants are in a tough division.
All right, and the NFL this week approved a one-year kickoff rule.
So stupid.
The vote was approved 29-3. I will go through this. Feel free to jump in as you wish, Mr. Darren.
I will.
So the kickoff will occur from their own 35-yard line. Mm-hmm. The kicking team, 10 players, will line up on the receiving 40-yard line. The receiving team is going to set up between the 30 and the 35 in that zone. It will be everybody except either one or two returners. That's what they are allowed. And then they will kick, and nobody can move until the ball either is caught by one of the two returners or enters the zone, which is basically from the 10-yard line forward. If the kick goes out of bounds and it gets, then the team would get it at the 45-yard line. There are no fair catches. And a kickoff in the end zone will get you the ball at the 30, except if the ball is kicked inbounds approximately, let's call it anywhere before the end zone, and then
the return zone,
and then rolls into the end zone. If that is the case, then the team would get the ball at the 20. That's a lot.
Well, they stole this from the XFL.
Right.
So stupid. I mean, the simple fact of the matter is now you can't do an onside kick unless you inform the officials and your opponent that you're doing an onside kick. So it's like when we played, football in the street, when we, you know, no fakes, you know, this is what it is. You can't fake it anymore. It's just so silly. I don't know. I don't see what was wrong with the old rules before. I still think you should be kicking off from the 30. I think there should be returns. I know they're trying to limit the injuries, but this is football. This is a game of some violence. I don't know why it has to be sugarcoated. I just don't get it. I don't see it. I don't understand it. I don't like it. I just think that this is just kind of dumb to me. I know that I have always resisted change, while you've always been a little bit more for change in rules in sports. I like things old the old way, but I don't like this at all. Go ahead, G.
I hate this. I listen. I like football. I know football. I read the rule 14 times before I was even able to put it down on paper exactly what has to happen. And even reading it is horrible. It's beyond me. I don't. You're going to tell me that this was the best they could come up with? If they were going to change this, this was the best they came up with? Because now basically what it's going to look like is a running play. That's basically what this is going to look like.
Let's start everybody off at the 25 and cancel kicks. Is that what we want to do? Do we just want to cancel it? Because what they're doing is downright stupid.
And listen, I think I would be – I'd even be more okay – with just canceling the kicks and everybody starts at their own 25 or whatever. I think I would be more okay with that option than this. Because this is a mess.
Just ridiculous.
It really is a mess. Just to even understand it is a mess. And listen, we understand what they're talking about. Anybody that has very little interest is not going to know what the hell is going on.
Now think about Super Bowl next year when they sit there and try to explain more than they do. They're going to spend 20 minutes on the kickoff that every football fan already has learned for an entire season, but everybody else is saying, what are they doing? This is what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to explain this stupid rule like to the umpteenth degree, because that's what it is. It's a stupid rule. This is just them trying to do something for the sake of doing it. It is not anything that enhances the game. Listen, none of the rules in any of these leagues go out of their way to enhance the game anymore. They go in there to enhance the scoring, but they don't do anything to enhance the actual game. Well, they make the game weaker while trying to make everybody's fantasy team look stronger. That's all they're doing anymore.
So this one, though, is for the injury purposes.
That's what they say. I don't buy it.
Well, it's to prevent the big hits that you have on these kickoffs.
So there's no chance of getting a big hit when a guy's running full speed at you and you get a chance. It's the same that 10 people are trying to tackle the one guy.
But theoretically, it's only someone from the 40 hitting a running back or receiver 15 yards downfield. It's not somebody with a head of steam for 40 yards hitting somebody. And although it isn't, but it looks like they're basically taking their head off when they hit them. That's what they're attempting to avoid. I think this is just this is far and away the craziest proposal. There were 10 other solutions they could have come up with. Listen, I would have settled with what you said. Just you don't want to do the kickoff anymore. Fine, give everybody the ball at their own 25 and end it. But this is going to be a mess. It's going to be a mess.
And listen, I know what they're trying to say, but you can't tell me you've never seen a running back getting their head taken off by a linebacker who started 3 yards away from him. You can't tell me, because it happens 10 times more often than it happens on a kickoff. Happens on multiple plays a game where a linebacker or a safety come in and take somebody's head off. That's just what happens when a running back is trying to dodge 9 other defensive players or 10 other defensive players and doesn't see you coming. That's the same exact thing. You can give me this 40-yard head of steam crap all you want. Simple fact of the matter is you can hurt somebody from 5 yards just the way you can from 50. You might minimize it a little bit, but I don't think so, because I've seen enough quarterbacks get banged up. I've seen running backs get knocked out. I've seen receivers get their heads taken off by a guy that's running from 3 yards away. It depends on where the hit is, and if you call strictly on the shots to the head, we won't have this problem at all.
Listen, I hear you. I can only go by the math, and the math says there are more bad hits on these kickoffs than anything else.
Where's this math?
I get why they're doing it, but the solution is just horrible.
There's no math. There's no math.
This is a horrible solution.
There's no math to this crap.
Sure there is.
Bull. There's no way there's math to this crap. You're telling me there are more injuries on special teams than there are in a regular offensive and defensive play.
No, that's not what I'm telling you. What I'm telling you is,
a car driving 60 miles an hour as opposed to 30. What are you trying to change the speed? Let me get the hell out of here.
What I am trying to tell you is the percentage of an injury occurring when someone is running full steam for more than X amount of yards is worse than what they're putting into play right now. I don't agree with it. I'm just telling you that is what they're trying to tell you.
Show me this math you're talking about. I want to see.
That's an NFL.
Making it up.
That is an NFL proprietary information source.
Just like the concussion information. Get the hell out of here. Right. The NFL's so full of crap. I gotta watch opening weekend in Mexico on a Friday. They're playing on Christmas again, which is on a Wednesday. Okay, you know what? I mean, listen, for football fans like me and you that have families, you know, we pull off our Sundays and we get Thanksgiving. And I get and we get the Monday night somewhat and the Thursday night somewhat. Now you're gonna ask us to grab a Wednesday when the kids want to watch A Christmas Story 24 hours straight or whatever they want to watch. Do they care about anybody except making money?
No.
How about the fan that on a Wednesday has to say, "Hun, yeah, no, the Jets have a home game on Christmas, so I won't be home for what?" I mean, listen, when it falls on a Sunday, you know you have a shot. The fact that they're doing this crap on a Wednesday is greed. It's as greedy as going to Brazil on Friday night of the first week of the season. Just another stupid thing by Roger Goodell. Go along with the hip drop tackle being banned. Stop bringing up Bo Jackson from 40 years ago. Bo Jackson was so strong he ran through that tackle. Otherwise, he wouldn't have had the degenerative injury. They're making it where you can't tackle. They're making it where you can't hit anybody. This game's better when the defense has a chance. This is crap. The NFL is becoming crap. Gee?
How difficult is it going to be for these refs to regulate the hip drop tackle?
No, it's so hard. So I saw a meme today, and it had Josh Allen looking stunned. And what it said was Josh Allen's face after throwing for 5 touchdown passes against Kansas City, but losing the game because of a penalty on a hip drop tackle with 12 seconds left. And you know what? Maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't, but the fact of the matter is that these guys have been trained to tackle for years. I understand that they're trying to clean up. You're taking away the hedge. Why don't we just play flag? Let's just play flag because nobody's allowed to hit anymore.
I mean, they have bad enough time trying to figure out pass interference. Now they're going to be in a split second throwing a flag on a hip drop tackle. That I got news for you. Half of them, they're not going to understand if it is or it isn't.
It's going to be hard to determine. Is that a true hip drop? Is that not? What are we going to do? Review things more? How bad are they going to try to make this sport? It already has become – listen, I'm not going to say it's unwatchable because I watch it every week and I love watching the NFL and I'm not full of crap. I'm not going to be full of crap and be hypocritical, okay? Do I find the NBA unwatchable? Yeah, why? Because instead of taking an 85% layup, I have to shoot it out for a 40% three where the math doesn't add up, but they look at overall twos versus overall threes and say that you have to shoot a three. So now nobody wants to get contact in that sport either. The NHL, listen, the rules haven't changed that dramatically, but enough with the way that they regulate the hits. Listen, I'm not going to go nuts. I just don't like the way they change leagues change divisions every year. I'd rather see rivalries. It's more fun. Baseball, listen, I concede to you that the pitch clock worked. I'm not even going to go nuts on that because you were right and I was wrong, and I'm big enough to admit that. But at the same point in time, this interleague crap is a joke. I don't want to see any more interleague. And now we have the NFL where you're not allowed to tackle. You're not allowed to kick off. You're not allowed to do anything. Basically, what we're going to do is we're going to put a penny on the quarterback and we're going to play flag the rest of the way. And then you can sit there and say, my guy caught 8 passes for 300 yards and 6 touchdowns, and I won my fantasy league. This is how stupid this is getting. This is what it is. All for the gratification of a 12-year-old doing a fantasy league. And we're 52-year-olds who do fantasy leagues. But we would much happier if we had competitive defensive and offensive games. I'm going to ask you one question. We're going to do this more next week when we do the baseball. But remember when you love baseball because of the pitching matchup? Remember when, you know, Gooden's pitching tonight, so we got to get the – even though we're both Yankee fans, but we have to watch the Met game. You remember when there was, like, just two aces going at it and you couldn't wait to see it? doesn't exist anymore because none of the aces go six innings. Nobody cares. Oh, I can't wait to see our bullpen against yours in the seventh. That's what they've done to baseball. It loses. I know I'm talking to Sweeney over the years. Oh, the amount of homers Mantle hit off the guy the third time around. I don't care. My horse went out there. Your horse went out there. Best game I ever saw was a Met versus Cardinals. Again, as a Yankee fan, best game I was ever live at, Met Cardinals, Gooden versus Tudor, 1985, fighting for the pennant. They throw donuts at each other for nine innings. Gooden a four-hitter, Tudor a two-hitter. They bring in Fiasco in the 10th, gives up the two-run homer to Tito Landrum. The Met crowd leaves. The Cardinals extend the lead in the division. And then I remember as a kid with Guidry, my mother, I was six. My mother let me stay up watching the 18 strikeout game where they kept standing up because back then the game started at 8, not 7:30. They didn't care about the kid. They just started the game at 8 o'clock. And our parents didn't care either. Go ahead and watch it. It was a totally different time. But, I mean, those are memories. Those are fun things. Football, you know, the 85 Bears, those Washington teams with Manley and Mann. These were fun things. They're taking it all away, Gino. Taking it all away. Let's put them pennies on them. Let's play flag. Let's not have any linemen anymore. Let's take that away, too. Let's just play 7-on-7 drills. Let's just do that. They don't learn how to tackle in preseason anymore or in camp because you're not allowed to hit, not allowed to wear pads more than one or two times a week or whatever it is. They have, and then you watch the tackling, and all they do is leave with their helmet anyway, even though they're not supposed to do that. Well, try to hit somebody with a shoulder, but nobody wraps up. But they're worried about the hip drop tackle where actually somebody tries to tackle somebody. Oh, my God. What are they doing to sports, Gino? What are they doing to me? They're taking what I love and killing it. Back to you.
They are killing it, Darren. I understand they're killing it. Do you have anything to add before we sign off for today?
These new rules suck. How about that? Goodell's a moron. Nobody wants to play in Brazil. Baseball shouldn't start in Korea. Hockey shouldn't be in Sweden and freaking Finland. The NBA, you know, you're allowed to shoot a two-point shot. It's not a punishment. I love sports, and they're taking it away from me. Anyway, that's it. Any other points, Jay?
UConn won today.
They won by 30. Oh, man. I felt bad for San Diego State. They were never really. They played so well early to stay within like six. Clemson also won that game final by five.
Clemson beat Arizona. So at this moment, we have 14 teams left.
Exactly. And the ACC still has four at this very moment. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Gino. Kevin on assignment. He's trying to figure out what's going on with this comet that's coming near Earth, plus everything that's going on in the solar system right now. Kevin's really he inspects this stuff. He really gets into it. He has different forms of spores, molds, fungus all over the house. It's just what Kevin does. But we are the Sports Kings from Queens. It's just the two of us tonight. Talking about the wonderful, wild, wacky world of sports. The sports that they're trying to kill by making them offensive freaking crap. Anyway, please download the podcast. Anyway, you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever you like. We post a lot on social media. By all means, say something to us back. Gino, you had a point?
And may your sports be with you.
And may your sports. We're not going to say that till May 4th. So anyway, but yeah, no. So, you know, comment. Let us know what you want to hear about. The hockey fans, I promise we're going to get more in depth on that as we go on. Basketball fans, we're going to do that too. College basketball, we're going to keep talking about it through the tournament. College football, the transfer portal opening up the first day of the tournament, by the way. What the hell are they doing? Yeah, guys playing in the tournament that put themselves into the transfer portal. This is how stupid every single sport is getting. But whatever. Please download the podcast where you can. And with no further ado, may your sports be with you.